Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi, catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with Jackson 5 nostrils. Earned all his money, but they never take the country.
Now it says Monday morning like a little formation by Beyonce. Welcome back. This is Dr. K in for Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show, your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Today we're talking about the rise in violence and the rhetoric about violence that's been happening at the Trump rallies. Call us at 410-319-8888, tweet us at Mark Steiner or at Kay Whitehead, email us at talk@steinershow.org or visit our Facebook page. You can also go online at www.steinershow.org. In the past couple of weeks, as Trump has continued to surge forward, as the Republican Party's frontrunner and his campaign rallies continue to draw thousands of supporters, they have devolved into racially charged violence and chaos. It is now becoming commonplace for African-American protesters to be beaten or arrested. Over the weekend, there was violence at his rallies in Chicago and Kansas City. A protester rushed a stage in Dayton, Ohio. This is a very different type of political system. And now we're in a different political season. Joining me for our national news roundup on Trump, race, and politics is Catalina Byrd, media consultant and political strategist. Good morning, Catalina.
Good morning, Kay. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. We have Lenny McAllister on. He's a Republican strategist, a former congressional candidate, and host of Night Talk, Get to the Point, on Pittsburgh Cable News Channel. Good morning, Lenny. How are you?
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing well, thank you. And just walking in to join me is Dr. Tyra Bynum. Excuse me. She's a postdoc fellow at Rutgers University. Good morning, Tyra. How are you?
Good morning.
So glad you're here. So, Lenny, let's start with you. Slate.com recently ran an article that stated that Obama led to Trump. But that's only because the Republican Party decided to be what Obama wasn't. And what Obama wasn't, insecure, bitter, vindictive, xenophobic, sectarian, is what the GOP in the era of Trump has become. Do you agree with that?
I agree with everything that you just said, or agree that Obama led to Trump?
Okay, well, let's separate it then. Let's start with the first part. Do you believe that Obama led to Trump?
Yes, but not in the way that perhaps they meant that headline.
Well, tell me about it then.
I think what we have learned is that we were so proud of ourselves as Americans on November 4th, 2008. We have overcome racism to the point where we can elect an African-American president. And all the election of Barack Obama as the 44th president showed us is exactly where we are when it comes to race. I don't blame President Obama, but I know that his election has allowed us to see exactly where we are in regards to race, equality, social tensions, et cetera. And America's been found wanting. I mean, and I don't blame that on Obama. A lot of people say President Obama led to this divisiveness. He's done things he should not have done, but to lead to this level of divisiveness, this has been brewing for quite some time. Again, people forget about Rodney King. People forget about some of the instances in the 2000 election where African Americans couldn't get an opportunity to vote and things along those lines. So with that said, I don't buy into that. Now, in regards to the bitterness, divisiveness, et cetera, Donald Trump has played on all of the worst fears that we have had as Americans, and it's led to him getting to the top of the polls.
Catalina, let me hear from you, because I think Slate.com was definitely being tongue-in-cheek. When you talk about being insecure and bitter and vindictive and xenophobic and sectarian, is that really summing up the Trump supporters?
No, it's not. And so, well, what Lenny said is true to a degree. The Trump supporter is, you know, doesn't like that we had a black president, and his being elected was not a symbol or indicative of us being post-racial the way some said. I've been saying that the last 7 years. And so the Trump supporter is the person who wanted their country back. They are the people who formed the Tea Party after his election. They are essentially white nationalists who, it didn't matter what his policies were, or what he did, or what he said, he was going to be wrong because of the skin that he was in.
Tara, let me hear from you. On Friday night in Chicago, when the violence broke out between the supporters and protesters, which led Trump to cancel the event, Trump said on Saturday that the protesters and the thugs, you know, it's a very racially coded word, he blames them for the violence. Some people say, you know, they should blame himself. What do you think?
You know, I think that this is, at base, just very, very troublesome on a lot of levels. And I also think that I'm very curious about the way that this is all being represented, in part by the media, and like the fact that we aren't doing enough to engage in discussions that call it what it is, and it's just racism.
Lenny, is it deeper than that? I mean, Tara's saying it's really just racism. Is it more than that? Is it more of this pushing the crowd in this new direction? Is it more of exposing maybe the racist core? Is it about white privilege? I mean, what exactly is going on?
You're asking Lenny?
I'm asking Lenny.
Well, I think that you know, you can understand that there's so much fear in America right now with the economy, with where our nation's headed, with some of the things that have happened overseas. And throughout American history, whenever there's fear in America, there's a tendency to go blame the other. What is the other group that we can blame for all of this tension, for all of this anxiety? Heck, at the beginning of the 20th century, there were Italians and Irish. You know, the paddy wagon, that's a slur. Because, you know, those Irish can't keep themselves sober, so you had to get a wagon to take a bunch of Irish drunks and shove them into a wagon to control them. The Italians, you know, we know about the B word with them, and it's because they were supposedly dirty, unethical, had no scruples. So there was always a group, the Chinese with the railroads in the late 19th century. We won't even go into African Americans over the course of 400 years with African Americans, Africans into African Americans. So when you take all of that together and then you add social media, you add a groundbreaking election in 2008, which we would have seen a lot of this if the first woman president was elected in 2008. We heard a lot in that primary. Unfortunately, it'd be very interesting to see what we see in the general election. How much will we still see that is directed towards Hillary Clinton because she's a woman, which is despicable. But we are seeing the worst of where we are still as a nation, and we're at another crossroads. We're at our 1960s moment for our generation, and it's very unfortunate because you were hoping, we all were, that the 60s happened one time, one unique time. And I'm starting to think that for Gen Xers and millennials, this is going to be our 1960s moment.
Well, listen to this, Catalina. February 29th in Virginia, Donald Trump said, "Get him out of here, please. Get him out," yelling to a protester. "Are you from Mexico?" Wanted to know if the protester was from Mexico. In Michigan, he says, "Get out of here. This is amazing. I love it. USA, try not to hurt him, but if you do, I'll defend you in court." In Nevada, "I love the old days. When this happened, we'd carry him out on a stretcher." I mean, it's state after state that you have this fire. Is this the 1960s moment, or what we have is what some people wonder, whether or not we have Adolf Hitler being recreated here?
I was going to go to those comments next, is to say that, you know, what Lenny is saying in a historical context, sure, makes sense, but I don't think other than Hitler that we can point to any one person in the 60s that is to blame, you know, for what happened and what we organized around. Whereas this language is being used intentionally. And when he's talking about the good old days, he's not talking about something happening before the last 400 years. He's talking about the 60s. He's talking about the people like John Lewis and others who were beaten and were hosed, fighting for rights. Those are the good old days he wants to go back to. That when people want to stand up for their rights, that it's okay to bash them physically and do them harm. And so he has a lot of elements that are similar to Hitler that are scary. And this moment does have some feeling to it, like it is the 60s. But the audience that he is egging on are so, first of all, voting against their own interests. Nothing that he said is going to improve their economic lot or make them any closer to the American dream. So similar to the other guests, I just say we call it what it is. It's racism, and it's being encouraged, and it's not being called what it is. And that's why I think it's so being allowed to go on. We're trying to be too politically correct with saying what this is in this Donald Trump phenomenon.
Well, it's interesting because the supporters are not being politically correct. We have a quick clip here from John McGraw, who's from North Carolina, when things recently got out of hand at a Trump rally.
Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him.
So this notion that John McGraw is the gentleman who sucker punched a black protester. They were leading him out of the Trump rally. The cops were there taking him out the door. John McGraw steps over. He's 78 years old. He sucker punches him. He gets arrested the next day after making this comment that, yes, he was being un-American. And next time we may have to kill him. That's more than just kind of feeling like we want to get back to an economic situation that you're pleased with. There's something else happening here. Tara, what do you think?
I'm always struck by our desire to kind of go back to a moment in time, like, oh, 2016, we're acting like the 60s. Oh, 2016, we're now trying to go back to the 1950s. I think that the historical context is important. It's an imperative part of our discussion. But I also think that it's important to understand that the landscape of the United States has not changed very much. I mean, as the guest said earlier, you know, I think that it's always been in the interest of those in power to split people in very particular kinds of ways, to create an us and to juxtapose that us against a very particular them. And I think the them has always been consistent. There have been a couple other new thems, but I think the us has always been white as it's defined in the Naturalization Act of 1790. And I think that the them has been those who are not considered white, and black people have never been considered white. So I think that it's almost not in our best interest to figure out what moment in time we're actually going back to. I think it's more important to say that, you know, since they made the decision to create whiteness in America, like in the 17th century, I think the intention has been to create a population that understands that whiteness is their most important and most valuable asset. And that ends up being the Trump supporters who, you know, it's true, will likely never become Donald Trump, but what they have, what they value, is the fact that they're just as white as he is. And maybe because of that whiteness, one day they can become billionaires.
Lenny, I want you to jump in here, because as I was listening to the McGraw tape, this whole notion of what it means to be American, he's not acting like an American, which has kind of become this new code word. Can you kind of unpack that for us, maybe?
It's more than the code word. It's thug. Thug is the N-word, and un-American is, you know, not white for a lot of people, not everybody, but for a lot of people. But, I want to push back on something. You know, in the 1960s, you know, poor whites protesting against integration was against their best interest. I mean, we can look at the economic revitalization of the South from the 1970s to now, the rise of the New South, as a direct correlation to the rise of the black middle class, the black political class, right, and other classes of African Americans in Charlotte, in Birmingham, in Atlanta, in the Old South, the same places where they were fighting integration, where they were fighting, if you will, against their own self-interest, where the whole community improved as a result. So a lot of this is going back to the 1960s and looking at some of the same things with different window dressing on it. You know, whether it's the new terminology, or, I mean, heck, MLK was called a communist and un-American for looking back at the Constitution and saying, America, keep your promise. I mean, Thurgood Marshall and others, how did they bring about integration and racial equality, or a new standard of racial equality, because we obviously are not there yet? They did it by pointing back to the laws of the land, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, literally looking at law and doing that. And it's unfortunate that when the underclass looks at the law and points to the law, we're called rebel rousers. Right. When others do it, it's called being American. And that's where you can see the dichotomy that we're still dealing with, living with, and we must heal from if we're going to be quite honest, survive the 21st century in the next 10 years without another terrorism attack on our homeland, or another great recession, or worse.
I mean, but things like saying that every Muslim hates us. I mean, what, all 1 billion? That was the whole discussion with Donald Trump, with his whole rhetoric around the Muslims hate us, Islam hates us. It's not helping in terms of helping the bigger situation. isn't it leading us back down this dark alley? I mean, you're talking about the 1960s moment, but the 1960s moment in 2016 has a greater implication. It's more of an international implication than a national implication. Tara, what do you think?
I think that and I guess I just reiterate my earlier point. We're talking about political strategies that precede the 1960s by a long stretch. Mm. Like, this is built into the structure of the United States of America. So I guess I'm not necessarily debating that there are similarities. I'm just saying that it is in the core of what this nation is. It's a part of our national identity. And as if our aim is just to say, oh, a Trump rally looks like 1963 in Birmingham, I think we limit ourselves in understanding the scope and origins of this kind of issue.
Catalina, as a political strategist, well, one of the concerns that the media is pushing back on is that protesters are going to the Trump rally to get their 15 minutes of fame. So you have a young African-American girl going into a rally. She's being pushed by Trump supporters. She's taking selfies, and then she becomes very popular. You have an African-American protester getting sucker punched, shooting the popularity. You have two white teenagers going to a Trump rally and then holding up a sign and doing a whole pledge how we don't agree with Trump, and they get 100,000 likes. So is this the new ground for even becoming more popular, getting more likes? Is it about social media, really?
I think that's a really dismissive judgment that's been made, because these individuals are younger and millennials are not thought to be politically astute or engaged, when I think that post-Ferguson, we've seen quite the opposite of that reflected. But to come back to something that Tara said, you know, what's different also about this moment, while it's important to have a historical context, is not just the social media, but it's also the demographic of America. And it's kind of like they put the expiration date on whiteness and in pure whiteness the moment that they defined it by a one drop. If you look at who the population is in America, it's become increasingly brown. We make up actually now the majority versus the minority, which is different than it was in the 60s. When we include people of Latin descent and Spanish descent, as well as those of people of African descent. And so what I've been likening this frenzy to some degree, even beyond Donald Trump's rhetoric, is imagining what it was like to be a bald eagle as they were beginning to go extinct, and realizing that your actual identity may not be the case in 100 years, in 50 years. I don't know what a non-white America looks like. It will still have racial implications in the systems and institutions, but it won't look the same by virtue of its people, because there's been commingling throughout the generations, as there was back then as well. And through their own definition, is whiteness on its way to becoming extinct in America?
Well, I think the issue with that, though, is just as historically, like, whiteness has preserved itself by way of including new people in that category. You know, I think it has expanded its borders. You know, I think that whiteness, because it is synonymous with power, is invested in maintaining itself by any means necessary. So if it means including a demographic that hadn't been included before, like, just as long as their skin is white, you know. I think that I also think that even as new people come into the country, what is still valued is an American dream that looks very, very white. So I think from my understanding of American history and our American present, I think that while the demographics of the nation look different than they did before, I think that there's not been anything done to whiteness and its value, whiteness and its relationship to power. So until those things change, I think that it'll just be the America that we've always had. There'll just be more people of color.
Well, this notion that trying to figure out if America is becoming more brown, I'm just, you know, picking up on Catalina's point, power structures and power centers are not changing hands. That is not becoming more brown. That is remaining centralized in the hands of white Americans, whatever that actually means. Like, we're trying to figure out what that means. We have a caller on the phone who wants to join us. Bill from Northeast Baltimore, good morning. How are you?
Yes, first of all, let me just say thank you and hello to everybody.
Good morning.
But, you know, I guess my question or my comment is this. You know, we have procedures in place for everything. Like, if you play sports and you do certain things, you get disqualified. If you go to school and you curse or you get in a fight, you get disqualified. If you're on the street, you're protesting and you got a bullhorn and you proceeding the flow of traffic or whatever, you can get arrested or whatever. I just don't understand, how can you be on the biggest stage in America and there's no disqualification for inciting riots and saying the type of things that Donald Trump is saying running for president?
Thank you so much, Bill, for joining us. Lenny, did you want to pick up on that? Should Donald Trump be held accountable for what's happening at his rallies?
I mean, I don't even know if that's a debate. I mean, that's not a debate. You know, there's a level of intellectual dishonesty that transpires when somebody says that he's not responsible for the rhetoric that's ramped up. I mean, people forget about what happened on Friday. He canceled the rally because he got wind that there were 400 protesters
yes.
staging a mass protest while he was going to speak. They were not necessarily going to get violent. We don't know what they were planning. We do know that they were in the building. We do know that if he started to speak, they were going to interrupt him in a very loud way. He didn't want that, so he shut down the rally. His supporters got mad because the rally got shut down by those hundreds of protesters that had infiltrated the building. Then the tensions rose between the two groups. So to sit there and say that these people came in, were immediately violent, and Donald Trump had to cancel the rally, no. It was the insanity of Donald Trump's arrogance to go into basically the west side of Chicago or the near west side and think that he was going to get away with calling Latinos the names that he's been and calling African Americans and other quote-unquote undesirables the names that he's been. That wasn't going to work in Chicago. He knew that. And that's why he shut down the rally. So, I mean, people, even with that, people twist the facts, and he's been twisting facts since he's jumped into this race. And as Americans, all of us, we have to decide if we want a country or if we want a shell of a country. Mm. And popularity is not leadership. And right now, popularity is winning in the Republican side of the presidential race for the 2016 White House.
Catalina, what do you think? This idea of going in to these debates, going into these spaces, but going in numbers. Rather than just one lone protester, you have 400 people who are organized and ready to work together as a group. I do think there's a difference.
Yeah, there's a very big difference, and all of the impacted groups take together because they have one common goal, which is to shut him down. And, you know, he lied, which he's been doing, and nobody seems to be picking up on it. He lied and said the Chicago police told him to shut it down because of the protesters, and Chicago police came out and made a statement and said that they hadn't told him if they were going to do that, they were still going to offer security, and they feel like they could have managed it. And so it goes to show that, to a degree, he talks a good game. He's talking about how, you know, how he would deal with Putin and everything. But essentially, he got punked by about 400 millennials, and everybody saw it play out on national TV.
Well, this is great. We're going to take a break here. This is Dr. KM for Mark Steiner here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. When we come back, we'll talk about Ben Carson. We'll talk about the future of the Republican Party if Trump does clinch Ohio. And on our way to break, I want to remind you, from school funding to testing, you can learn about the important issues impacting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website, MarylandEducators.org. That's MarylandEducators.org. On our way to break, Redemption Song, as performed by Sweet Honey and the Rock.
Sold I to the merchant ships, minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around.
That is Tracy Chapman talking about a revolution. It's Monday with Dr. K. I'm sitting in for Mark Steiner here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're talking about what has been happening at the Donald Trump rallies. And I want to start with Amajil Whitlock. I have her on the phone. She's an activist here in Baltimore. She actually attended the first Trump rally, if I'm not mistaken. How are you this morning?
Hi, good morning. It actually wasn't the first Trump rally. So basically, sometime in November, there was a man named Mercutio Southall who was assaulted outside of one of Trump's events. And, you know, I have done a lot of work around anti-racism and anti-fascist work, and I could see that that things were eventually going to get more violent. Mm-hmm. And in December, there was a Trump event in Manassas, and I had decided to go along with a few other friends to work to protect other anti-Trump protesters. And just to let some of the listeners know, during the rebellion here in Baltimore, I actually worked as a street medic and built a street medic collective to support our frontline protesters. So basically, like what we do, we help deal with issues associated to like chemical weapons, tear gas, rubber bullet wounds, anything and everything that we can do to support protesters that are being attacked by you know, other individuals and or police of various different law enforcement. So that's exactly why I went to Manassas to work as a medic to support other anti-Trump activists. And next court date, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you were saying your next court date. I want you to finish that, please.
I was actually harassed and arrested by Secret Service and Prince William Police. And I have a pending felony charge in Virginia. And my next court date is May 9th. However, you know, as these rallies continue to become more violent and Trump himself, you know, is instigating violence. I mean, he's been on, you know, TV basically saying, you know, hurt us, do things to us, and his legal team and all his money would pay for it. I mean, that's just disgusting from a so-called presidential candidate to incite, you know, racial violence against people. So, you know, as long as he is, you know, running for president, as long as he spews his hatred and fascism and racism and Islamophobia, there's going to be, you know, people like me and other folks that are going to continue to stand up and fighting back.
I have a question for you before you go, and I thank you so much for calling in and joining us. There is some talk, it could be a rumor at this point, that Donald Trump will be coming to speak in Baltimore on April 26th, right around the time that we will be commemorating and thinking and talking about the death of Freddie Gray and the uprising. Right. Do you think the protest against him will be bigger? I mean, you're talking about 400 folks shutting them down in Chicago. Are we expecting something bigger in Baltimore City?
It's interesting if he will come to Baltimore. When I found out that he was going to Chicago, I was like, okay, that's pretty interesting. I don't know why they chose to go to Chicago. But the last time he was actually here, he was at the BWI Marriott with the GOP. They had a fundraiser for him. I don't suspect he would actually come into Baltimore. I don't think that would be a good move. If he went to somewhere else, I would see us basically, you know, going out to BWI Marriott or, you know, wherever he is here in Maryland. Other anti-racist, anti-fascist groups are calling for people to boycott and protest wherever he's at. So if he comes here, whether he comes to Baltimore, you know, we'll have a big showing here, whether he goes to BWI Marriott or wherever else he comes here in Maryland. You know, I would hope that people would stand against him and get on the inside and protest as well as be on the outside.
Well, thank you so much. Keep us updated on what's going on so we can have our fingertips on the pulse. So as we get back to our guest here, I'm joined by Dr. Tara She's a postdoc fellow at Rutgers University. I will get her name right. That is my goal. We also have Catalina Bird on the phone. She's a media consultant and political strategist. And we have Lenny McAllister on the phone. He's a Republican strategist. He's also the host of Get Right with Lenny McAllister on News Radio 1020 KDKA in Pittsburgh. You can also join us at 410-319-8888. We're talking about what has been happening at the Trump rallies. Lenny, I want to start with you. So people were surprised that Ben Carson threw his support behind Donald Trump. I want you to talk about this as a Republican strategist. First of all, was it really a surprise on the ground? And is this guy just running for Surgeon General, or does he think this is the new way forward? Lenny, are you still with us? All right, Catalina, let's go.
No, I'm here. Okay. On mute. Sorry, on mute.
No problem. So the question is, we're just talking about Ben Carson.
Yeah, it was a disappointment to me. And inconsistent. Again, I don't want to get into questioning people's faith. But when you're an evangelical, and he, you know, Dr. Carson made it a point to draw a contrast between Trump's nature, ego, and presence versus his own as two, you know, purported Christians during the campaign trail. To see this behavior as a Christian, pointed out as a political rival, and then say, I made my peace with it. Mm. It's troubling to me. And then on top of that, as a black conservative, mm-hmm. we don't have too many opportunities
right.
to show African Americans that we hear their concerns, we understand frustrations collectively as one big team, as one community, not as just segments. And Dr. Clinton just came across as tone deaf, and that is very much disappointing.
Catalina, what do you think? I mean, what is Dr. Carson doing here?
I was agreeing with Lenny, because I was going to say he never sounded as though he understood, and I think even more so, he kind of backed away from his own blackness to a degree as he was running. So this didn't really surprise me. The Chris Christie endorsement of Trump surprised me, but the Ben Carson one did not. They were saying a lot of the same kinds of hateful things, only his were coming. We were hearing them differently as people of color, and we were hearing self-hatred where we hear racism in Donald Trump. But when you listen to the things that they said about Muslims, when you listen to the things that they said about the LGBTQ community, they were really similar in their admonishment of those people and those groups. And so this didn't surprise me at all.
Tara, I have a question for you. So we have on one end the disappointment that Lenny's talking about. Catalina says she's not surprised. Self-hatred, racism, they were saying the same thing. What do you think? How do you feel about Ben Carson coming out saying, as a Christian, he's made his peace with the things that Donald Trump is saying, even from implying that Ben Carson was a pedophile, to questioning Ben Carson's faith, to talking about Ben Carson's wife, that he has forgiven him of all these things, and we're now starting a new chapter. What did you think about that?
You know, every now and again, and this may appear to be a digression, but I promise it's just my train of thought. I think about what it must have taken for Ben Carson to be a pediatric neurosurgeon at Johns Hopkins.
Right.
And I think it means making decisions in so-called compromises like this one. I think that his career has been figuring out how to manage to be successful in spaces that may have otherwise not been friendly or particularly nice to him. So I guess I'm in the camp that is also not surprised and maybe saddened by the fact that that's how he's been successful, these kinds of compromises, this kind of forgiveness, if I can call it forgiveness.
That was a big leap in forgiveness, because it was almost as if he's saying, not only am I going to forgive him, I want everyone else to forget what he has said and stand with me in my forgiveness and put your support behind it.
Hold on. I don't buy any of that at all.
Okay.
And I'm the black Republican on here.
Okay.
Isn't that how we continue to compromise our communities down the road? Isn't that exactly how you continue to cement stereotypes and cement the path of destruction that many within our community are on? That's hogwash. Again, That's being a good politician. Mm. We need leaders. He was supposed to be a leader. The reason why people voted for him, and he was at the top of the polls at one point in time, because people thought he was an honest, straight shooter that was above the very thing that you said that he probably did. That is what makes his whole candidacy, if that's true, it makes it hollow. And I have to say, as somebody that is a public figure, somebody that's run for office previously, somebody that's had to put myself on the line with a lot less money than Dr. Carson, a lot less notoriety than Dr. Carson, it is extremely disappointing that somebody would line right back up behind this type of rhetoric and not try to change the dynamic. And it gets very frustrating for me personally, because how in the world do you help be part of the solution where people that have more power, more gravitas, and are further ahead in the journey are willing to take the necessary steps to elevate the community? It's an atrocity in many, many, many regards, and it does a detriment to people that came before us generations ago.
Yeah, but I also think that it seems like a step that makes sense. You know, I think in as much as if he had been able to garner the necessary votes, the necessary, you know, the necessary numbers to move forward, maybe he would have been that leader. But if he has to concede, then it makes sense to me that the compromising, the, you know, I can't think of a better word than forgiveness, but the forgiveness has to happen. And then the alignment with Trump ends up being an opportunity to protect whatever he imagines his interests to be. So if it is, I want to be.
Selfish.
Oh,
Jackie
there's
Robinson
no, did, no one is,
Jackie
no one.
Jackie Robinson did not do this when, Jackie Robinson and other black Republicans did not do this with Barry Goldwater in 1964.
Well, here's the thing.
Why 50 years later are we saying it's okay for Ben Carson to do it? That's duplicitous.
Well, no one's saying that it's okay.
Well, let's do it one at a time so people can hear us, because I know that people are interested in this. Taro, so what do you think?
So I don't think that it's okay. No one's taking Dr. Carson off the hook. I guess what I'm suggesting is that it makes sense. And I think that kind of compromising in order to be successful for himself, like, sure, it's selfish, but as Dr. K suggested, I mean, maybe he can be the Surgeon General. Maybe he can get a cabinet position
which
if Trump wins.
Which is completely selfish.
Yeah, of course.
Completely selfish.
But I think that it makes sense.
Catalina, what do you think? Let me have you jump in here. I mean, this whole discussion around Ben Carson is very troubling for people for exactly the reasons that Lenny laid out. It's very troubling for black conservatives that this man who at one point was on top of the polls, so diametrically opposed to Donald Trump, and then when he stepped aside, the very person out of all the people he could have chosen to step in line with is the person he was the complete opposite of, or so he seemed to be in the beginning. Catalina?
As Lenny knows, because Lenny and I know each other, you know, I was raised by black Republicans in Baltimore, and Dr. Carson was not involved with the party. So this makes sense on a number of levels, because I have always contended that he ran, and he was a Democrat when he was in Baltimore. He became a Republican when he retired from Hopkins and moved to Florida. He wasn't involved with our, and it was about taxes. It was why he also left Maryland. He told us about it on the Set of Square Off, why he left. I have always contended that he was running as a means of selling books. And so if I look at it from a sales and marketing perspective, if you withdraw from the race but you align with the front runner, because I don't see where he's ever been accountable to our community. And I don't believe that he even believes that he owes it to our community to be accountable to. He has separated himself as a black man from the other black people in the country. And so from a marketing perspective, this keeps him in conversation. This keeps the press talking to him because he's now endorsing them, which then equates to more book sales. And so while it is disheartening for black Republicans like Lenny and my dad and a bunch of other ones that I know, he's no Colin Powell. And he never had any inkling of implications that he was going to be and was going to be that person that was going to change the paradigm or change the rhetoric or change the conversation in a way that was accountable for the community. He's never shown those signs anywhere in this short-lived political career.
Lenny, did you want to respond?
I agree. I mean, it's unfortunate, but I mean, again, this is what's troubling. And you look at the political dynamic within black America right now. We have the CBC that refuses to hold Hillary Clinton accountable for any of the stuff that she did 20 years ago. They have lined up lock, stock, and barrel behind her, and are not even making her compete for the votes. And 8 years ago, they were the ones initially telling us there's no way Barack Obama could possibly win, and they were lining up behind Hillary Clinton then. And then on the other side of the dial, you have people that have very unique opportunities. Herman Cain was at the top of the polls at one point in time 8 years ago. And what did he do with that opportunity? So at some point in time, those that have the opportunity to be historic must be historic if we're going to change the path of history for African Americans in all of America. Otherwise, we are doing nothing more than taking a bunch of closed selfies. You might as well call all of them Kardashians because they're basically doing the same exact thing.
Mm. Herman Cain was selling pizzas, though. Again, it's the criteria. I mean, does it take a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon, for that matter, all puns intended, to become a millionaire selling pizza in urban communities? I mean, we see it done by other nationalities all the time. And because our criteria for running, which is a part of our Constitution and one of the things that makes our country great, doesn't require that you have an actual sense of community or any type of moral compass. It requires only a residency requirement and being of a certain age and for certain positions, possibly being an attorney. That is kind of where we are. This is what happens when you don't teach civics in school. This is what happens when you allow popularity to trump actual experience and ability to do the job. And we're just watching what has become. We've been dissolving away from what the actual core values are of what we look for in elected officials and in our candidates for quite some time, long before Ben Carson. He saw this opportunity for himself, and he took it.
Well, let's get to some callers here who are really wanting to get on this conversation. Kenneth from Baltimore, good morning. How are you?
Yes, good morning, and thank you. First, I want to say Ben Carson is only trying to be president just to prove to President Obama that he can do it too. The man has no credibility, has no plan. He's just like Donald Trump. There's no way that I'm going to take all that stuff from Donald Trump and then turn around and endorse him too. Mm. And the people who are voting or are following Donald Trump, it just shows the mentality of this country, of American people. Not all of them, but anybody that follows Donald Trump is showing their retardation like he is. Catalina Byrd, you are a political bandwagoner. I can never understand what you're talking about, who you're voting for, your greatest potential. You're leaving it behind because you won't even talk to an average person who wants to talk to you.
Okay, Kenneth, we thank you so much for that. Now, this notion that those that are jumping in with Donald Trump are just jumping on the bandwagon, that they're showing that they have no sense at all. So what do you think about that, Catalina? Is it just a bandwagon now that's going to eventually ride itself out?
There were two dynamics to that comment from Kenneth. One is that there are people who are bandwagoning, but that's what happens in parties anyway, and why I'm unaffiliated. That's kind of the nature of partisan politics. We'll see the same thing happen in Baltimore most likely after this contentious Democratic primary. They will fall in line and support the Democratic nominee for mayor of Baltimore. That is true to politics. And then Kenneth has an issue with the fact that I didn't call him back on something personally. And so now he went from being my biggest fan for the last couple of years to me being a disingenuous person. But I don't actually book or control the topics of any of these shows that I'm on. And his issue didn't get the attention that he wanted. I can't apologize for not being the producer, though.
I can't. I'm not even asking you to. We want to go to another call. Ernest from Baltimore. Good morning. How are you?
As usual, Catalina Byrd is the master of confusion. And so is black people. Now, I heard Lenny say something about how great Colin Powell was. Colin Powell? I mean, it's something that's definitely wrong with African-American people. Like Dick Gregory said, you're not even Americans, and you're going to talk about conservatism? If Lenny would go up in that meeting with those white people with Donald Trump, they wouldn't know if he was a conservative or not. And they would attack him. But this is the problem with me, Dr. Whitehead. When you have these individuals on here talking all of this crap.
Ernest, I'm going to say thank you so much for calling. This issue
Can I address that, please?
Yes, of course. Lenny, I was coming to you first. Come on.
Number one, I've been in those meetings. I have talked to those people. I have supported the people that are trying to go in the right direction. I have literally stood nose to nose, literally, with bigots trying to take not only the party, but policy in the wrong direction. So anybody that calls in there that tries to tell me that Whitehead and this, is that, and the other, don't know, because I don't see them walking with me. When we had to fight for voters' rights in Pennsylvania, I was the only Republican standing with the NAACP, Ben Jealous, and the SEIU. I don't remember anybody coming up to Philadelphia helping me do that. So let's not talk about that. Now, in regards to being conservative in America, and that goes to our problem. We help build this country. We are citizens of this country. And then when we get uncomfortable, we immediately want to cast aside our citizenship and then wonder why we get treated as second-class citizens. Either we are citizens and we demand full citizenship and we keep fighting until we get it, or we leave. I'm not leaving. I was born in Pittsburgh. Most of us were born in the United States. If you go as far back as Paul and in Rome, even when they were going to try to take him out, he went to the Romans and said, wait a minute, I'm a Roman citizen, I have rights. And they had to stop and listen to him. And if it's going to work in biblical times, why the heck wouldn't we use it in 2016? So the foolishness that we should put this aside is part of the misnomer that we end up getting caught up in, and it gets us distracted from the solutions that we need because we are being uncomfortable in this moment. Who cares about the discomfort? It's time to be historic and change the discussion as well as the results that we're getting.
Thank you for that. This notion that people want to jump in the discussion and we open up the phones, we definitely want to hear what you're saying about the issue that we're talking about. Lenny, I actually want to come back to you again because there's talk about what would happen if Donald Trump continues to surge forward. If he clinches Ohio, there's talk that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is planning ways for vulnerable Senate Republicans to distance themselves from Trump should he become the nominee. Do you think they will actually do that, or will they support the nominee that the people seem to want?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know. There are some that say we have to get behind our nominee because the nominee is going to still be better than Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. And there are others that say we should not get behind Donald Trump regardless because we see what Donald Trump stands for. To me, it's about saying this, that my soul and the soul of America are worth more than winning the 2016 White House. It would be very interesting to see how many Republicans say the same exact statement.
What do you think, Tara? So what is this notion? Will they distance themselves, or will they give the people what they want? If this is who you want and everything that comes along with it, should the people we elect get behind what we want?
You know, I think...
And I'm using we in a very general sense, of course.
Of course. You know, it makes me think about two things. I can't necessarily speak to what the Republican Party will decide to do or how they will handle the kind of popularity versus the moral standard. But I do think what is curious to me is, and this is a point that I keep returning to, and it's how Donald Trump has changed the way that politicians or so-called politicians can speak about these subjects. So I think what's of greater concern to me is not necessarily the debate about whether or not he'll get the nomination, but like what he has done to the rhetoric at present and how he paves the way for the next kind of Donald Trump, or paves the way for the masses to use the language that he does and to like not just get away with it, but normalize it again.
Catalina, did you want to jump in on this?
I don't think that he's creating. I think Donald Trump is the only person that can be Donald Trump. I think that we have been getting signs that someone like him would be entering our body politics in a really relevant way the last 7 years, and we weren't paying attention to those signs. But I think that ultimately either Rubio or Kasich, or even if they can figure out as the two possibly maybe staying people left in the race to work together, I think that they stay in it through the convention, and though it'll be a fight, that one of those two will end up ultimately being the nominee.
Lenny, I want to ask you, at the recent rally, and I just want to continue our conversation about Donald Trump as we only have about 3 minutes left or so in this segment, but at a recent rally, this is the one in Dayton, Ohio, so you had this image of Donald Trump on the stage, you had the Secret Service stepping in to protect him, and you had people saying, well, maybe he's actually the victim in all this, which I just thought was outrageous, but that image of him having to be protected, I mean, is he getting exactly what he wanted?
Well, I mean, do we advocate violence against any person? No. At the same time, do you gin this up? Yeah, he has ginned it up. But it's, you can't sit there and say he's getting what he deserved, because that's exactly what Trump is saying about people that are coming into a rally to protest what he's saying, knowing that they are maybe two people among 10,000. Are they getting what they deserve? Mm. The bottom line is, you do not want to see violence against anybody. And the protester said he was just going to grab the microphone. But either way, we don't want to see any type of violence against anybody. Because if you think that this situation's bad now, what would happen if this man got stabbed? What would happen if this man got shot? I mean, we would really devolve into a very explosive situation. So there's a way to defeat Trump. There's a way to stand up to his rhetoric. There's a way to be brave and stand up for American values across our diversity. And that's what we need to do.
Now, Catalina, we just had a message that come across Facebook from Michael, who actually, what Lenny was saying is that not that he's getting what he deserves, but he looks like the victim. He looks like he needs to be protected. He said that's his notion around having him stand around with the Secret Service, that he feels like he's the one that looks like he's in danger. Is that taking a step?
There's some people that wonder whether or not they were real, and what the conversation that I've been having is that due to a threat or your certain polls or the number of criteria, it's standard operating procedure for presidential candidates to have Secret Service details at this stage of the game going into the convention. So I believe that those Secret Service, which were actually the people. And so for me, being the American that I am, to me, the victim is the Secret Service people. These are guys who don't get to pick their details and put their lives on the line, and they have to protect someone like Donald Trump. And they might not even be in support of his rhetoric or what he's doing. And so He might look like the victim, and we can talk about him like he's the victim, but the real victims are the Secret Service, who have to protect him and put their lives on the line and possibly not make it back to their families, and they didn't even get to have a say in it.
Tara, let me wrap up with you. So as we move forward, as we're looking at this violence, as it's increasing at these rallies, what do you think that people should do? What should be the next step as we fight against the powers that people feel are in charge of us? I mean, that's what people are saying. I'm reading the comments from Facebook. They're like, you know, Trump is leading us in the wrong direction. If you keep saying Trump is leading us, then my concern is, are you actually following him? Because you don't have to follow just because he's walking away.
I'm not sure that I have the answers, but I certainly think that what seems very important to me is calling out precisely what Trump is. What Trump is doing and what Trump represents. And one of the things that, you know, in preparation for this conversation I did was kind of Google the news stories around Trump. And there was talk of skirmishes. There was talk of violence. But the headlines didn't necessarily speak about those skirmishes, the violence in ways that are as decidedly racialized and xenophobic as they actually are. And I think the only way to talk about Trump correctly, I think, is to call it what it is, to name it what it is, and not just start a conversation, but I guess be willing to take action in a way that recognizes our historical moment as part of a much longer historical moment.
Well, thank you so much. We will leave it there. Dr. Tara Bynum, postdoc fellow at Rutgers University, Catalina Byrd, media consultant and political strategist, and Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist, former congressional candidate, and host of Night Talk, Get to the Point on Pittsburgh Cable News Channel, and Get Right with Lenny McAllister on News Radio 1020 KDKA. We want you to stay with us after the break, because we will continue to talk about police accountability. We've had this conversation on our show quite a bit. We're going to keep going with it with Damon Love from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle. This is WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, going out with Pharrell and the song Freedom.
Hold on to me. Don't let me go. Who cares what they see? Who cares what they know? Your first name is free.